Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host and my co-host from Imagine Up, Publicity, Delilah Jones, is also with us this evening. So I said welcome a second time. And tonight we bring you a very interesting topic. It's a unique topic, one that I don't believe we featured in all of the 15 months that we've been on the air. So this is very exciting for us, and I think it's very topical. We're dealing with the issue of violent crime and the influence of gangs. But not only are we going to focus on that, but we're going to focus on a very positive outcome as a result of a recent homicide which happened in Southern California. So, and Yuval Garza is our guest this evening, and her son just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, Martin Alberto, and she's going to walk us down the path of their story. And this just happened to have happened this past January, so it's very recent. But I have to tell you that she's accomplished much. Delilah, welcome, and what's your thoughts on our topic tonight before we bring our guest in?
Thanks, Donna. I think it's a very important topic for listeners all over the country. We're seeing the prevalence of the gang culture, not just in California, but all over the country, and not just in big cities and urban areas either. We're seeing a lot of different types of crimes coming out of gangs. And so I feel like anytime we can get someone who's had this type of experience to relay to listeners, it's information that we need to be aware of and we need to educate ourselves about. So I would also like to say at this time, I totally honor and respect the guests that we have on tonight. I'm just amazed at what she's been able to accomplish in such a short period of time, and I will bow to her.
Yes, definitely, and ditto all your comments. I totally agree. So without further ado, Garza, welcome to Shattered Lives. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you, and thank you so much for being willing to come on and educate our audience.
Hi, Donna, Delilah, thank you very much, and we're blessed by God to be given this moment. Yes, my son is at God's side right now, and he was saved from a brutal tragedy. He and my daughter were together all the time, and like any other night, we're out together, and they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he suffered a stab wound that killed him eventually.
Yeah, which that's so tragic.
Family.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's devastated our family, but we now have, tried everything we could to make sure we bring out the positive out of something that is so tragic in our community.
Right, and it seems like you've really tried to, from the get-go, from the very start, to try to put a positive focus on this. And with you being so religious and having a strong faith, and as you told me prior to coming on the show, I think your message was that you needed to take control and to have faith that. Now, faith in God or faith in the system and faith in your community, does your faith extend to all of those venues?
You know, our faith was grounded before this happened, and I believe that is what got us through My son was enrolled in the RCIA program at our church with his father. And,
what
you know,
is
it
that?
Was some, it is the religious study to be able to complete your First Communion confirmation and your sacraments before getting married.
Okay.
And so he was already, you know, in touch with his faith and believed truly, you know, what God has destined for every one of us. When
mm-hmm.
we're hit with the tragedy, we could have easily taken another route of anger and destruction and lost sight of what the focus is. You know, we wanted to make sure we understood that he was God's son to begin with, and therefore he has gone home. It isn't something that we're to accept, but in our community, we are all very tight-knit. My son was an All-American football player, and, you know, we are a football family for 4 years in high school, and, you know, everyone from the community knew my son, not only through football, through church, but also because he was so loving and forthcoming and helping others in their time of need. When our family was in the time of need, our whole community came together and was carrying us through this. They, you know, gave donations. They organized fundraisers for funeral costs. They sent prayers. And it wasn't just from our community, our immediate community. It was from the whole county that we received the support. And one of the things that I wanted to ensure is that we didn't go out in retaliation and we didn't encourage violence, because violence is what had brought us to this moment. So,
right. That's so insightful, you know, to not have it, you being a mother and in your grief, not to immediately, you know, jump to anger as your initial reaction and let it overtake you. I mean, it just seems so measured, so mature, and just really, really the way to go. And I imagine this is really helping you in your healing. It's going to take a very long time, but at least you have a start on healing and going down the right path, I think.
Yes, and I will tell you, it was not easy but it was the right thing, and it was what God, you know, was sending our way and making us understand, and that we couldn't take revenge,
right.
And but we did seek justice, and our community, you know, had come together so much, and they were all in mourning my son's death. Many who have, they're come in contact with myself because I'm a teacher and I work, you know, at different districts here in the community and
mm-hmm.
in the county. And my husband, you know, also in his, you know, peace officer role, had met several people, and they have come in contact with our kids because we were and still are a tight family, very loving. And we showed it in public. It wasn't something that we kept secret, you know. We hugged and kissed in front of everybody, and it didn't matter where we were or who was in front of us. And so, you know, at that moment that we lost him, it wasn't just us suffering. It was the community that had seen us and loved us through the years and loved him through the years. There was only, you know, one way we can just all come together as one. And what we did is we organized a candlelight vigil immediately. The next day, we went to his home, his football field, you know, Warren Field, the field that he played on every Friday Night Lights. He had a home
mm-hmm.
game, and thousands of people gathered within hours because we announced it Monday morning, and within hours
uh-huh.
we had over 1,000 people on the field with candles.
Wow.
We had, you know, a prayer service, and we had a moment of silence. Many of his friends and you know, family members were able to speak out.
Mm-hmm.
And
was there any anger or retaliation by anybody in the community? I mean, outside of your circle, did people were there any kids that, you know, rioted or caused trouble, or did you set the tone for everyone to come forward in such a loving and positive manner?
I think everyone's initial reaction is anger and,
right,
you know, retaliation and let's go get whoever did this to him. But
right,
I do believe that as a family, we came together and set the tone for our whole community, for his classmates, for his friends,
mm-hmm,
that were angry, that were wanting to, you know, speak and want to get a piece of that person that did this to him, because he had, at this point, had not been arrested. And they were just doing the investigation and, you know, talking to witnesses. And we just had to wait, you know, till the investigation was done. Luckily, while we were at the candlelight vigil,
mm-hmm,
the officers and several agencies came together and were able to arrest the suspect, and he was arraigned the next day. And so within 2 days of losing my son, my husband and I had to find ourselves at his arraignment.
So this was very quick. They quickly identified who it was, because can you tell us a little bit of the circumstance? Was he and a friend had gone to a party, and this person that ultimately stabbed him was at the party? Is that right?
I can't talk about the case, and I don't know the details of the case. All
okay.
I can share is that he went out with his friends, and the altercation led to the stabbing and to his decease. You know, he ended up passing, and that's about
right,
as much as I can share about that night.
Right. But the person that was arrested was at the party.
Yes.
Okay. So in this, they identified, they arrested him and arraigned in the space of 2 days, which I, you know, for something like that, I think is rather unusual. In a lot of cases, it takes so long to identify for sure and to have enough evidence. So that was good in that respect. You know, I just wanted to say, just to interject too, when you're talking about in the area of the country where you are, I had the pleasure about 3 or 4 years ago to be sort of initiated into your culture and your geography in Imperial Valley, and it is a very poor area of the country, right near the Mexican border. And I participated in a program with the Upper Brown program and was there for over a week. And I have to say that everything that you have just validated with regard to everyone being very close-knit and very loving and friendly, it was the same experience I had. And although people there, you know, are migrant farm people and they work in the fields and they don't have money. And looking at some of the articles that you had sent, you know, Raleigh County or that area has 25% unemployment. But it sounds as if even with all of that going on, you know, you are happy in participating in family activities and in your community, and that just really shines through in everything that you say. Is that correct? Kind of how I painted the picture. In spite of those things, you know, you draw strength from each other and love from each other.
Yes, that is correct. We live in a farming community. It is not a metropolitan area, and
mm-hmm,
kids, you know, have a limited amount of activities that they can get involved in, and yet our community, our parents, and, you know, churches, you know, come together to make sure we give these, you know, children something to do, and therefore it brings us all together, and we, you know, support one another when there is a loss, when there is a need.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of it being the highest unemployment city or county in, you know, the nation.
Right.
Our our county is very giving. They have, you know, really supported all the nonprofits here. And even though we're in need, you know, the businesses here, the farmers and, you know, other locals have, you know, really become generous and come together for the sake of the community. And that's something that you don't see a lot of in our metropolitan areas. And, you know, this little, you know, water town, you know, water tower town, that's how we do things. And that's something that I am blessed with and our family is blessed with, that we live in such a small community and we were able to touch lives throughout the years that we've lived here. And we're blessed with everyone coming through and carrying us through and continue to carry us through even 4 months right. into this tragedy.
Sure. Can you talk a little bit about the incidence of gang activity just in Southern California and maybe in your area? How did it infiltrate, you know, your small, loving, close-knit community? You know, the gangs are everywhere, but how prolific is it? Are there one or two gangs that people know of, or do you have some sense of that?
You know, one of the mistakes that we make is to ignore the surroundings that not affect us directly. And, you know, I was involved with my kids. They were in football. They were in cheer. They were in, you know, extracurricular activities at home. At school, and you know, they'd come home and do their homework. So you get into this mindset and you get into this, you know, everyday activity that you not only just not understand what's going on besides what your regular...
your routine,
routine, that you don't realize that there are gangs out there. There are kids that are not being, you know, guided and are falling, you know, into the trap of, we're a family here. You know, you don't have a family, you don't have a father, but we will do this for you. We will come together and we will have your back. And I, even though I worked with at-risk youth, you know, as a teacher, and I see a few gang members in my classroom, you know, they were still seeking that help and that attention to be able to get out. I have been able to, you know, connect with some of these students in my classroom in the past years and, you know, have talked to them and counseled them and even showed them a different path that they can, you know, proceed with instead of gang, you know, affiliation and gang violence. Mm-hmm. And it just took a little bit of my time out of my schedule in my classroom to sway them in that direction. Now, do I believe
that
there's...
How do you do that? Is that through continuing, which, for instance, I'm just, you know, I'm sort of guessing, do you recommend that they continue with education, they continue with religion, they continue with sports or extracurricular activities, just rather than turning to gangs? Or, you know, how does one in your position as a teacher try to steer them away from gangs? Because I think a lot of people across the nation, we are faced with this and we don't know. How do you advise someone, for example?
You know, one of the things that I have done as a teacher, and I only speak for myself, is I tell them they must believe in themselves.
Okay.
They need to understand that something and they can contribute something to our community. I would create projects within my classroom that, you know, steered them in that direction. I had gone to training on vision boards with Jack Canfield, and we would create vision boards and create what is it that we see in our future. In order for them to be able to know where they're going, they need to have a map. So one of our projects was to create that map when we were in class and know where we want to be at the end of the school year. Where do we want to be in 5 years? Where do we want to be in 10 years? And mm-hmm. that visual, and after they visualize it, help them believe that they can achieve it, and they can achieve
it
through.
Does that give them hope?
And it does. We, you know, I honestly saw many of these kids, you know, gleam at the thought of actually graduating. I had one class that had 17-year-olds getting ready to drop out. And one of the activities that I know I did, and these were kids that were on that route of, you know, being in gangs, and all I did was pull them into a room, put on a cap and gown, and took a picture for them and told them, this is going on your vision board. And
wow, that's excellent.
I had, you know, gang members that were in tears in there. I had, you know, girls that were only thinking about being wives and having kids, now start thinking about, I can graduate and I can go on to school, whether it is, you know, a trade school or, you know, college or university. And
mm-hmm.
I remember seeing their reaction to that little time that I took out of my schedule to just be able to reach out to them and
mm-hmm.
tell them, you can do this. Look at how good you look in your, you know, gown and the diploma in your hand. I mean, it's almost
mm-hmm.
like you can feel it, but it does require some work. It does
right.
require you, you know, dedication, and most of all, believe in yourself. I can believe
mm-hmm.
in you, but if you don't believe in yourself, then how can we move in that direction?
Yeah, that sounds so very powerful. You know, just those little things that you did, those little gestures, to give them time and attention that they didn't get elsewhere. Can you tell me, now, when I read some of the material that you sent, your son Martin felt like his ticket out of kind of the usual path there in your small town was through sports, right? Through football?
Yes. He was a football player. He fell in love with baseball as a little kid. He played Little League, and he loved baseball, and that, I believe, was his first love. And then, you know, as he entered, you know, high school and started the football program, I believe he just found the love of his life. You know, that football family, the football, you know, just like the gathering together and being on that field and being able to leave that vision and the anchor and everything that he might have bottled up, leaving it there in the game, you know, was something that he looked forward to on a daily basis. He would get up 6 o'clock in the morning, go work out in the workroom, you know, the weight room, get back 7 o'clock, take a shower, get ready to go to school, be at school, and then after school, go to practice, come back from practice, shower up, get ready, you know, to do his homework or have dinner. And his senior year, he started going to his Bible study on Tuesdays. So it was that constant being active with the sports, with the practices, with extracurricular activities that he found that ticket that would take him somewhere. We had been getting his information together, his stats and video, so we can send it to Division III and two schools in order for him to continue playing football, because that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to continue playing football and study business administration, you know, with the focus on sports. And, you know, as we, as a mother, ESPN mother here, we would talk about it, and I wanted to send them over, you know, to Arizona, Northern California, or some other division, you know, three or two school. And he's like, he was set on Mayville in North Dakota, you know, college with a smaller population that was very similar to our community. He met, you know, the recruiter. He
mm-hmm.
looked to the players that had already gone to Mayville, his past, you know, teammates. And he's like, Mom, that's going to be my backup plan if you don't find anything better for me, but I'm going to Mayville. And I kept telling him, no, I'm going to look for something better. And he was set on going to Mayville. His football season finished, I believe, in December, last week of November, first week of December, somewhere around there. And at
mm-hmm.
that point, he was already talking to his past teammates that were at Mayville in North Dakota about being roommates. Now, what senior in high school is looking for a roommate in November, December, his senior year?
He was really thinking ahead, wasn't he? Wow.
He was. He was, you know, thinking ahead. He was preparing in case anybody else was going over there. He wanted to make sure that he was set and had, you know, somewhere to stay. And I think more than anything, he wanted to be able to convince me with a plan. Because he wasn't going to go there unless his mama said it was okay. And I think he did that more than anything because he's like, if I'm going to convince my mom that I'm going to go to Mayville and play for the Comets, then I need to make sure my plan is set and convince her that that's the best place for me. And that was his first step, was talking to his recruiter, talking to the teammates that were already playing there from the Imperial Valley, and, you know, talking about where they're going to live, where he can actually find a part-time job. And it was that preparation that really made me believe that my son was going to be able to get out of the valley and, you know, be able to contribute to our society in a positive way. He had actually said that he wanted to come back to the Imperial Valley, to Bali, and teach math. If he didn't finish, you know, the business, he would do math teacher. He had an inspiring math teacher that really made him love and appreciate math. And he's like, Mom, if, you know, that doesn't pan out, I'm going to come back, and this is where I want to raise my family.
And he had a plan B. That's wonderful. Lila, do you have a couple of questions at this juncture? I have a few.
I'm just soaking all of this in, and I know. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm just in amazement and respect and honor for your situation. As we go through this second part of the show, why don't you talk about Mothers Against Gangs, what the mission and goals are, and you know how this all we know how this all came about. But what are we hoping to accomplish, maybe not just in your community, in your area, but can it go further?
Well, you know, when this tragedy happened and our family was, you know, at a point where what do we do now? What are we going to do without him? What brought us to this situation, and the reflection of that moment and that situation after being at the candlelight vigil. I came home and I started looking for pictures because we were going to have to prepare for the funeral. And as I know, I'm pulling out pictures and I'm looking at everything. Something, you know, kept bringing in my head, which was his initials. You know, because some of the kids were writing his initials MG, and I just kept telling them, no, his initials are not MG. His initials are MAG. And
what's his full name so that everyone knows?
Martin Alberto Garza.
Martin Alberto Garza. Okay, MAG.
So, MAG was, you know, something that, you know, we knew were his initials. And you know, I talked to my friend, my best friend, and I told him, like, I can't believe this happened to me. We've deterred from, you know, the gang affiliation. We've deterred our family into positive, you know, activities. And you ask yourself, why? Why did this happen? And, you know, I thought about gangs and how they come together and how kids get sucked into there. I said, I have to do something about this. And you know, one of the things that I thought about is, as a mother, you know, what could we do to help deter kids joining gangs? And I knew about Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. It's, you know, an organization that started off with the basic idea of deterring people from drinking and driving. And I thought, well, why not deter, you know, kids from joining gangs? You know, and make sure that we have available activities for the kids that aren't getting put into, you know, into the activities. And offer them that opportunity to get involved in football, get involved in piano lessons or some other sort of extracurricular activity that would interest them and make them believe that with that they can find another venue rather than the game.
Yes. That's one idea. So what? How did it come to be?
So when I thought about his initials, I told her, I said, you know, I feel like I need to do something with it. And I came up with the name Mothers Against Gangs. And I think at first many were a little bit worried because they thought that my goal was going to be to go into the barrios, the areas where the gangs, congregate and try to deter them from, being in the gang at that point. And I had to make myself clear in stating that that's not what the mission and the vision is. The mission and the vision of this is for us to deter the kids from even beginning or going down that road and helping them see that there are other things that they can do with their talent, with their abilities, with the love for a certain activity. And instead of, spending their time in the streets and doing things that may, walk him into the situation of being part of a gang, then we can take him off of the street and give him a coloring book, give him, a ball to play with, a chess, game to start with, something that would just create a distraction so that they won't go down that road.
Did you change that focus if people thought you were going to, all of the moms were going to congregate and go into the El Barrio and start knocking on doors or whatever? Isn't there also another kind of a side name? Isn't also Men Against Gangs? Is that right?
Yes, we have made an adjustment because I think there was also a perception that only women could deter kids from gangs, and I wanted to make sure that my husband felt like he was part of it, and
right.
And men are the role models for these boys, and we as women are the ones that take care of them and give them that motherly love, and so together as a team we can help them have another view, and the girls, have that self, belief that you don't need to be with a gang member. You can find a really great guy without having that gang affiliation because
sure.
Although we may look at gangs and we see mostly males, there are the females that do get involved with them that are part of their group. And, they become, a family because there are other females. And that's one of the perceptions that I wanted to make sure that everyone understood, that it doesn't just have to be mothers that are helping us. It could be men, that want to change the community and want to change the route for these kids, the youth in our community.
Well, didn't it start with somebody that approached you at the funeral with respect to doing a 5K race? Was it a
succession
of activity?
My son luckily was loved by many of his classmates, and a couple of his classmates approached us and said, we want to do something in his memory, and we were going to do a 5K for a senior project, which is a community service project for the seniors at his high school, Raleigh Union High School. And they approached us about the possibility of allowing them to use his name and also to be able to raise money for the coalition. When I chose the word coalition to attach to the Mothers Against Gangs, I thought about how we can work together with agencies, with nonprofits that are already doing the service, and just coming together and making a stronger bond. When you have a coalition, you have a focus and you have the same, vision to be able to make a difference in the idea that's at hand. So when they decided to come forward, I thought this is a great way to bring the youth in. And I took it a step further and said, you know what? We shouldn't just have a 5K for adults 18 and over. I think this mm-hmm. should be a 5K that our kids can get involved in. You know,
sure.
So we actually made it affordable for youth to be able to get involved, high school students, elementary students, junior high students, to perform, you know, to do the walk or the run during the 5K event. And,
right.
you know, it was an idea that stemmed from these girls' hearts that wanted to give back in some way and wanted to make a difference. And when they had heard yeah. about Mothers Against Gangs, and they said, you know what, this would be a great way to raise funds for it. And I was touched, and I felt very blessed to have our youth reach out and want to be proactive. And I think if
right.
we have more youth like that, we can start changing, you know, the community, and we can start, you know, motivating kids to help others.
Mm-hmm. And aren't you applying for nonprofit status? Is that right?
Yes, we are in that process of applying for the nonprofit status. You know, it's a long process, but we feel that this is something that is taking off, and it's taking
mm-hmm.
off so quick that it's hard for us to even kind of slow it down, because there's a need, and in order to fulfill that need, you kind of just have to let the ideas roll out, and the, you know, and you make mistakes along the way, and you correct and you make adjustments for the next time. But
sure.
you know, I was thinking about how can we help others. If we have a nonprofit status, we are able to reach out and get partners to help us reach out to
mm-hmm.
our communities. And a nonprofit status would allow us to also apply for state grants and federal grants, as well as, you know, approach our business, you know, affiliates.
Community, yeah. And isn't it
to...
true that you've gotten scholarships? I mean, just in these 3 or 4 months, correct me if I'm wrong, some of the accomplishments of that, well, the 5K race, a multi-sports event that you held May 3rd through May 5th, some type of, you were able to garner financial assistance for the prom for someone that couldn't afford prom apparel, and senior scholarships as well for the class of 2013. Is that right? You've done all of those things and more
yes.
in just these last couple of months?
In this short period of time, that is what we have been able to accomplish. It is amazing. Sometimes I even look back and I think, wow, in a short period of 4 months, we've been able to do these many activities, and it is with the help of the community, the help of the businesses, the participation of the families, the participation of the kids that are willing to come out and be part of the MAG Coalition activities. They wear their shirts. We have shirts that, you know, represent my son and represent the coalition, and they wear them proudly in public and school. And you know, I think that's one way that we can start promoting, you know, positive interaction within, you know, the community. If we can all stand together and deter, you know, students and kids from gang violence, then we've accomplished something in serving God.
Right. And
well, I think what I'm hearing, the most important thing that I get out of this is the fact that you're being proactive instead of reactive, and you're unifying. I think you'll see in the future, you'll be able to unify with a lot of other larger coalitions and nonprofits and really make a bigger difference even outside of your own community. As this is one of the problems that I've seen over the years with a lot of issues, is that we are very reactive as a society. And I think you and what you've pulled together have shown that you don't have to be reactive to the negative. You can form something very quickly to go into the future and to be proactive and prevent rather than reactive and imprison even more people.
You bring up an excellent.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah.
There's something that I would share that I have been sharing with everyone that hits on that topic, which is something I also learned from Jack Canfield in his trainings is, you know, we have an event that has happened. We cannot change that event. My son has died at the hands of a gang member. I cannot change that. It is something that is constant, but the way that I react to that event, the way we all react, the way that my family reacts, the way that his friends and his teammates and the community reacts to that event will determine the outcome for the future.
Yes, you're so right. And that's such a powerful statement. You know, I don't want to leave it to the very end. So can you please give, because I want you to have enough time, can you please give us the contact information, and are you accepting donations from anyone that's interested in donating?
Yes, actually in our article that we submitted to Shattered Lives, we actually included our P.O. Box number and the address.
Can you say it on the air now so that people have it again?
Okay, I believe it's P.O. Box. Let me. You know what? I don't have it on hand. I need to open my email because I don't have it memorized yet.
Okay, that's all right.
Do you have a website up yet, or are you working on that?
We have the website on Facebook, and we are working on a website for the web. Right now, we're in the starting process of that, but we can give the P.O. Box on our article that we submit to you so that people can send in their private donations, because we are, you know, pending, and we're in the process of dealing a nonprofit, and therefore we can't apply for any grants yet. We're hoping that we do, you know, get more funding once we have that nonprofit status. But right now we're solely depending on private donations and fundraisers that have, you know, slowly come up with in this, you know, short period of time.
I have the P.O. box. If anyone wants to send donations, they can send it to Mothers Against Gangs Coalition at Post Office Box 1639, Brawley, that's Brawley, California, 92227.
Thank you very much, Delilah.
You're welcome. I wasn't focused on
that, but I'm glad that you guys have, you know, placed that plea out there, because we are at, you know, a point where we've given out our scholarships. Well, we're in the process of awarding all of our scholarships, and you know that depletes your account of the funding that you have made over these fundraisers. So any donations would be welcomed and well used. We usually post on our Facebook the things that we're doing.
Do you have an office that you've set up?
We haven't set up an office, but we hope that once we get our nonprofit and we have that funding, we can set up a work area so that people can go and seek the help and the assistance that they need. You know, one of the biggest dreams that I have is to be able to have a center so that these kids can go to, because we do have after-school programs at our schools, but not everyone qualifies, and they're not open, you know, late. And sometimes these kids go home after these after-school activities and they have nowhere to go. You know, the Boys and Girls Clubs, they close up, you know, 4 or 5. And, you know, if we can just have a couple of more hours and deter them before parents get home from the fields, because remember, we are in one of the highest unemployment rate cities. The city, you know, has one of the highest unemployment rates, and many of these parents that are working, they're working two jobs, or they're working the fields, and, you know, it's very hard for them to be able to balance, you know, their family, their work.
Do they work there until sundown? And
yeah,
then,
just depends on what farmer you're working with and what hours they have. Everyone has different hours. My son actually worked in the fields and, you know, felt, you know, like he was earning his money and doing something really great by harvesting, you know, our fruits and vegetables. I enjoyed seeing him go out at 5 o'clock in the morning. He'd go out and head out and come back by the afternoon. But there are some that work, the, you know, later shifts. So, you know, we just have to try to provide different services that there is right now. So, you know, we don't want to conflict in with services that are being offered, but offer a different type of service, still, you know, serve the same student in a different way.
Yeah, I understand. You know what I'd like to have you address? We have about 13 minutes or so left to the show. A couple of things. I'm just marveled. Well, one thing I wanted to know, I understand that you got a little bit of victim services with regard to the advocates letting you fill out paperwork for compensation with regard to funeral expenses, but you really haven't had too much in the way of any other types of support or that type of thing. Is that true?
Yes. You know, one of the things that, you know, I have not been aware of, and maybe because I am being proactive and not reactive, is that I only talk to the victims, the services at the beginning when we did apply for the services and had our first date at the arraignment. And up to that point, I haven't seeked any other services, but you know, after speaking with Donna and getting some information from Delilah as well, I feel that there is, even myself as an educated person that I am, have a need to know more about what my rights are as a victim. I will share that.
It's very important.
We didn't realize, at least I didn't realize I was a victim. I always referred to my son as being the victim. He was the victim. He was the one that was killed. And we went to speak at both of our prisons. We have two prisons within our county during the victims awareness ceremonies. And when they introduced us and said, you know, we have had our family hit by violence and, you know, the Garza family are victims of gang violence. When I heard that statement, I didn't realize at that point that I was a, because I had been so strong, because I was being proactive, because I was defending my son when, you know, the press was trying to turn it in a different, you know, direction. And when I felt the need to defend, you know, on my own, I didn't realize that I could reach out to my victim's advocate to get that help. And, you know, I'm hoping
yes,
that...
Yes, and you should. And we will continue to help you with information, too, because I think it's so important. You have Marcy's Law, and you have many, many constitutional rights, both state and federal, so it's very important. And, you know, you're not a victim in the sense that you are a survivor, Yulio, as a woman, you know, a survivor extraordinaire because of what you've done and how proactive you've been. And, you know, another thing that I'm curious about is that, you know, you just seem to be, maybe your proactive activity is kind of putting your grief in a corner of your mind right now, but with regard to coping with the situation. And can you talk a little bit about how your daughter and your husband have been, how often been coping,
you know,
on an emotional level?
You know, I believe that it's normal for us to have our moments of grief and mourning. But one of the things that I think has held us together is knowing that we all have faith grounded. We had been going to church and studying, you know, my son and my husband were studying, you know, to become full-blown Catholics, as I tell them, the faith that we had in God and his purpose and his plan, and understanding that even though tragedy has hit us, it doesn't mean that it has shattered us. You know, we don't feel that God did this on purpose to us, and we don't question him. And my husband, you know, we have our moments because it's our only son.
Of course, and it's so fresh and new. You need to give yourself permission to grieve.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we each have had our moments, but one of the things that we just keep talking is, I don't know where we would be had we not gotten close to our faith within the last 2 years. We would faithfully mm-hmm. go to church every Sunday. We'd go and have breakfast afterwards. My son just loved going to brownies after church and, you know, having his menudo or his, you know, chorizo con huevo or whatever, you know, was in the menu for that day. But that was what we looked forward to on Sundays, just getting up in the morning, getting ready, and heading out to church. And, you know, when he started studying and, you know, wanting to become, you know, full Catholic and being able to take communion, I think was something that my husband and my daughter and I kind of understood, like he was setting the example for all of us and preparing mm-hmm. us for this moment. How do you deal with your only son being gone? How do you deal with your best friend, my daughter's best friend? That they've grown up together. They've been each other's right hand, left hand, and shadow.
Right.
All their lives. You know, since my son was born, he was being taken care of by her, looking after, you know, each other. And this past Mother's Day was really hard. The same weekend with prom. It was, mm-hmm. you know, both church, Mexican Mother's Day and American Mother's Day. It was two different dates that I personally have had to endure, and it wasn't easy. I will share that I think I did a lot of my mourning during that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my husband does the same and has his moments, and my daughter has had her moments. And the good thing is we come together and we still have dinner. We mm-hmm. still go out. We still smile. We laugh. And we thank God for that
right.
day that we had.
He would have wanted you to do that.
Yes.
Can I ask you about the fact that, you know, if you're from your water tower town in the small towns in that area in California, it seems that everyone's talking about getting out and that, you know, the industry mostly is farming. Is there a way to bring more prosperity there so that everyone's not focused on getting out? Or is that just the young teens that want to get out and there's a lot of elderly people that remain? Or what's the situation there?
You know, that may be, you know, a different point of view for, you know, different people in the valley. But I believe that our youth want to get out because they feel that there aren't any opportunities. And I think that our business sector and our chambers, chambers need to really think about what can they do to attract more, you know, businesses that our youth would want to come back to work mm-hmm. with. That they are so influenced by media and, you know, the shows that there are so many more better things outside of the Imperial Valley that's what they yearn to go after. And mm-hmm. little do they realize that we do have a different type of service, and that's the service of togetherness, the service of family community, but we are lacking that economic, I think that economic movement to encourage them to come back and serve their community. You know, it's really great to see them. I wanted both of my children to move away for college. I was not one to hold them back. And I always mm-hmm. told them that this would be a great place for them to raise their kids because that's what they did. I came back to my town and I decided to get married and settle down and raise them here because it was safe. Because
right.
I would shield them from gangs and I would shield them from drugs and I would shield them from everything else that I had lived through in the metropolitan area that I grew up in. And here we are. It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what your economic level is, what your society, you know, status is. Things will happen.
Yes.
And we're proof of that.
Yes. That certainly is. I think that's a universal message. With respect to your overall or your long-range goal, I know that you wanted to grow Mothers Against Gangs and coalesce with other nonprofits and maybe want to build. Do you see like a recreation center being built, or what's your long-range goal with respect to the organization? And you know, how can other businesses and people and other people listening, besides money, maybe contribute? Are there other ways?
You know, I know that there was one dream that my son had when he was little. And he says his grandmother had come to him in a dream and told him that his mom was going to build a school. And the school was going to have this mascot. It's a lion, which is family to the wildcat. You know, they're the wildcat. Mm-hmm. And I told him, what did you say, you know, son? He's like, Mom, you're going to have your own school, and you're going to, you know, have lions as the mascot. And I couldn't believe it. This was 7 years ago. And here I am 7 years later. And that's mm-hmm. one thing I do. So now one thing that he shared was open up your own school and be able to have that focus and be able to help these kids and make them believe and do things outside of the box that sometimes your public school system doesn't allow. You know, I know that in public school system we can't have prayer. Sometimes mm-hmm. something that the kids do need is a little bit of prayer, you know, every morning. Or the extracurricular activity that's not offered, you know, piano lessons and other things that maybe our school, our recreation center could offer. You know, as
so maybe a learning center/recreation center, something of that nature?
Yes, I think that that's where we're going in the future. It's a big vision, and mm-hmm. the things that we used, you know, as a little saying that he had was always go big or go home. And
right.
when I decided to start this, I said, well, go big or go home, you know, and... big, and here we are 4 months later, and we have done big things within a short period of time, and I believe that they're only going to get bigger and better with the
That's
help
true.
Of...
Make sure you reach out to all those corporations in San Diego, too. It's not that far. You know, I'm sure you thought of that. Talk to Rosie. Rosie Lopez.
I will definitely talk to Rosie Lopez. She's a great friend and an angel here, and an honor.
Yes.
I really believe that.
For sure. For those people that don't know, she is the director of the Upward Bound program for Imperial Valley College or Mini College, and a wonderful inspiration, has been doing it for many, many years, and a friend to both of us. So we say hi, Rosie, and keep up the good work. And to you and your family, I just have to say, you know, we've got like a minute and a half. I'm just so awestruck with what you've been doing. If there is one lasting message that you would like to leave with our audience here, what would that be? And then I want you to promise after the trial comes up or the legal proceedings, would you come back and please give us an update on how you're doing?
Definitely, definitely. I think that something that we all need to keep in mind is that we need to keep the faith. We need to make sure that we believe in what we can accomplish. And even though you may be sitting there in your home, in your car, mm-hmm. in your office, you can make a difference.
Right.
And God will let you know in what way you can help Mothers Against Gangs.
Can people get in touch with you if they'd like to start something in their area?
Yes, my phone number is also... 760 area code 791-9125. I can be reached, and I'd be happy to collaborate on projects with other organizations or even agencies to help with our vision and our
wonderful. That would be wonderful. You know, you sound like such a wonderful teacher as well. So I just have to say thank you so much. Yuliel, it's been a wonderful hour. Please do keep in touch with me, and we'll have to sign off for this evening. So I say thank you so much. Delilah, thank you. And we'll see everyone next week for another episode of Shattered Lives.